20. Maracy got a few hours of sleep, nestled in the front seat of the truck as her convoy rolled toward Bilming. Fortunately, they'd been able to recruit drivers from the constabulary night watch, so they were used to the hours. Hers wasn't the talkative type. The woman wore her jacket with the collar up, a cap on her head to shadow her face. The team had been told to maintain their disguises even while driving. When Maracy had dozed off, they'd been traveling through the bleak darkness beyond Ellendale. When she blinked awake, the sun was rising and they were passing the Bilming suburbs. Maracy had never been to the city, though it was only a few hours by train along the coast, but she had a good grasp on the politics of why this city was so important. As traffic into the capital had grown overwhelming, Bilming had become an essential port and dockyard. Its seaside nature let it trade with other coastal towns, ignoring Ellendale's railway monopoly. In addition, Bilming was a chief port for trade with the southern continent, where much commerce was being handled by traditional ocean shipping, not airship. The discovery of those new lands had brought wealth into Bilming, and wealth meant power. Many in Ellendale thought they had let the people of Bilming grow too independent, and in recent years it had become the one city in the basin that could legitimately rival Ellendale. Many in the capital spoke of Bilming snidely, pretending it was a rural outpost of half-educated sailors and drunken dock workers. Maracy knew better. This wasn't a rural backwater. Bilming was a metropolis in the making. She passed neatly laid out suburbs, but even more swaths of land that had been set aside to eventually be filled. Many developments were mid-construction, houses being built, each in a different style, no two roofs matching one another, no two doorways in the same place. Yet there was a strange symmetry to it, one she couldn't quite pin down. It was the same downtown, which, though still distant, she could see had half-finished pillars of skyscrapers growing up like the mythical spires of Credit Shaw. A dominant building at the direct center was furthest along. It had to be a good 70 or 80 stories high, rivaling the tallest buildings in Ellendale. Each of the buildings, particularly the one at the center, had a strange aesthetic that mixed the feel of a fortress with modern sleek lines and steel finishings. As they drove closer, the roadway passed under a large elevated railway that ran in a circle around the city. Some sections were unfinished, but big swaths of it were already in operation. Everything had a metallic feel to it, like burnished steel, enhanced by the skeletons of buildings rising up, their girders exposed. The finished buildings had metal roofs or siding, not always polished and often with a patina. The overall effect gave the great variety of building shapes a cohesive theme. She was impressed. Even half-finished, this was a city with a plan. The design screamed of industry, forward-thinking, and accomplishment. They passed numerous billboards proclaiming the virtues of self-reliance and sovereignty. You didn't have to read far between the lines to see the tone those were setting. Independence from Ellendale.
"You ever notice," her driver said, "how kids always draw houses the same way?"
Maracy frowned, glancing at her. The woman's voice was on the deeper side, but Maracy couldn't make out much about her. Maracy had chosen her truck at random, picking one that had boxes in the back, not constables, hoping that would help her sleep.
"I can't say that I've noticed," Maracy said. "It's strange," the driver continued. "You can imagine the shape, of course, square box, triangular roof, door right in the center, two windows, often a chimney, even though fewer and fewer homes have those these days. What house actually looks like that? Almost none. So why do kids draw them?"
"I guess it's easy," Maracy said.
"Perhaps," her driver said. "Or maybe they're not drawing a house. They're drawing someone else's picture of a house. What they've seen others make, an icon, a symbol."
Maracy narrowed her eyes.
That's an interesting observation, Constable... what was your name? I go by Moonlight, the woman said. We like code names. It's one of our things. I have never heard that word before. You wouldn't have, since you have no moon here. The woman leaned back and stretched out her arm on the top of the steering wheel, causing her sleeve to inch back and reveal a red tattoo on her forearm above the wrist, the same symbol that had been on the card left for her. Slowly, cautiously, Marcy reached for the pistol in the holster under her arm. You won't need that, the woman said, her eyes still on the road. They'd been forced to slow considerably now that they were approaching the center of the city. Who would have guessed that an outer city would have so much traffic? Where's the constable who should have been driving this truck? Marcy asked. What did you do to her? Nothing, the woman said. She's fine. But I find it amusing that's the first thing you ask. I mean, I understand, but maybe get your priorities straight, Marcy. Marcy kept her fingers lightly on the grip of the handgun, but didn't draw it. Was it you in the cavern? The person wearing a white mask? It was black, the woman said, passing that little test. Yes, that was me. And are you human? 100%, the woman said. I'm not a local, though. She pulled off her cap, revealing straight black hair and a ponytail and uncommon features, a shape to the eyes Marcy had never seen, prominent cheekbones. Are you from the southern continent? Marcy asked. No, Moonlight nodded to the city outside. I've always hated Bilming. I should like the thought they put into design, yet the underlying message disturbs me. They're trying hard to make each building individual, but the way it comes together is too deliberate. It makes the artistry feel hollow. And why do you think that is? Because of Trell's influence, obviously. Marcy leaned forward. Tell me, please. Moonlight glanced at her for the first time. Such self-assured eyes, with a cocked half-smile on her lips. This was a woman who had put herself at the very center of a group of constables and didn't seem the slightest bit worried. So hungry, Moonlight said. We don't always share answers with outsiders, Marcy. I could have you arrested and interrogated. On what charges? Interfering with constable business? Interfering? How? I was instructed to drive this truck. Don't play coy, Marcy said. You're impersonating a constable, plus it's against the law to withhold information vital to an investigation. The woman smiled, turning her eyes back to the road. Strange how similar cops are, regardless of the planet. Regardless of the planet? Rust and ruin. Marcy had known that there were other planets out there, of course. The Chandra talked about it. But rusts, it was still hard to accept. They pulled to a halt as some traffic worked its way into the street ahead of them. As they did, a beggar came to Marcy's window. Per the notebook's instructions, Marcy unlatched the window and folded it down, then handed the beggar a few boxings. The dirty man slipped her a piece of paper. Can you get to Biggle Way? Marcy asked, reading the note. Yeah, Moonlight said, turning them down the next street. That's in the industrial district. Marcy's truck pulled into the lead and the convoy followed her, all 10 keeping in a tight double line. At the next corner, Wayne's truck came up beside them. She could make him out talking the ear off his driver, who turned out to be Hoyd, Wax's coachman. How had he gotten involved in the sting? Can't tell these days, Moonlight said, if I'm keeping watch on him or if he's keeping watch on me. Realistically, we're both just keeping watch on the same third parties. What? Hoyd? Marcy asked. He's been in Wax's employ for years. He's an odd fellow, but... In the next truck, Hoyd glanced at them, passed Marcy, and nodded to Moonlight. Damn. What in the world? How much of her time had she wasted on bank robberies or protection rackets when this was going on? Whatever this was.
Has it ever struck you, Moonlight said, how art is so destructive?
Art, Marcy said, frowning.
Destructive? Each new movement consumes the one that came before, Moonlight said,
starting them forward as the traffic began to creep into motion again.
Chops it up and feeds on the corpse. Takes the bones, but drapes new skin on them. Each new piece of art is in some way a parody of what has come before.
You sound like an artist yourself.
I have certain talents, she said. My experiences have given me an interest in the quirks of the artistic world and its values, you might say. Tell me. Let's say you had one of only 16 extremely rare pieces of art by the same artist. What would you do to ensure yours becomes the most valuable?
If I play along, Marcy said, will you tell me about Trell?
I'm trying to right now.
Marcy frowned, considering.
I have one of 16 pieces of art, and I must ensure mine is the most valuable?
Yep.
I'd try to create an air of mystique around it, Marcy said. I wouldn't show it off. I'd let the other 15 become common by comparison, and the value of mine would increase as people shared the story. There is one more, one no one has seen.
Clever, Moonlight said.
I'm impressed.
And what would you do? Marcy said.
Steal the other 15, Moonlight said. Then I'd be able to manipulate the market however I wanted.
Ruthless.
Not as ruthless as other options. These pieces of art exist, Marcy, and your planet's god holds two of them.
Ruin and preservation.
Indeed. That makes Harmony the most valuable, the most invested being in the Cosmere. One of the other 16 decided the best way to improve his stock was to try to destroy all the others. He managed it in a few cases.
And is that Trell?
Moonlight shook her head. No, his name is Odium. Trell, Autonomy, had a different idea. You see these buildings, these houses? All pieces of a larger art installation. The grand creation is impressive, but it's not yours. This kind of pattern and those straight lines, those reflective panels, that's from a Taldane movement known as Brutalism. That's part of what I hate about Autonomy. She claims she wants everyone to be individual, gives them each a little house that is distinctive from the others, but only in a way that fits her plan, her desires. It's fake individualism, a corporate uniqueness. Like an advertisement telling people to go their own way, be their own person, by buying this product like everyone else.
Marcy struggled to parse all of this, but what she understood reinforced what she had suspected. A being from another planet was leading this city and had plans for the people of Marcy's world.
What is Trell's goal, then? Marcy asked, if he doesn't want to destroy the other gods. Trell is trying to edge out the others, Moonlight said. She, he, they, it varies, doesn't like engaging other gods directly. We call them shards, by the way. Autonomy is trying to outcompete the others by filling the Cosmere with versions of herself. Crowd out the competition, so to speak. Like an extremely invasive plant moving into another ecosystem, and strangling the local varieties.
Marcy frowned.
I think I understand. Conversations about autonomy can be confusing, Moonlight said, her eyes on the road. Trellism is the remnants of an ancient religion on your world, originally founded by Autonomy long, long ago. A seed for when she decided to move in. Now that time has come.
Autonomy is looking for someone on this planet to fully take up that role, that identity. Wait, take up that role? She wants to leave a god behind on this planet, Moonlight explained. Someone who bears some of her power, who sees to her interests and is, in many ways, a piece of her soul. She does this all around the Cosmere. Some worlds have entire pantheons that are all versions of her, each of which has a distinct personality and identity. So, she's role-playing? With herself? Yes, Moonlight said. But Autonomy's investiture has a life of its own, and so each version of her becomes its own thing over time. Sometimes they aren't a person, but only power. Other times, if the situation needs more oversight, she picks someone to elevate. So, Maracy said, she's going to take our world by setting up a rival god and forcing Harmony out? Basically, Moonlight said. Your planet is a primary target for her, Maracy. Two shards in residence held by one person frightens her. You had gunpowder weapons and electricity before any planet in the Cosmere aside from her core homeworld. She sees you getting stronger, learning more and more, getting close to real secrets. It makes you the biggest threat to the Cosmere, at least to her. I don't see how this could defeat Harmony, though. I don't either, honestly, Moonlight said. I'm not sure any human can understand the full plan, but she knows Harmony has trouble acting, and so she has seen an opportunity. Maracy sat back, breathing out, her hand slipping from her gun. Answers. Actual answers. She'd been searching for so long, hit so many dead ends. To finally get an explanation felt wonderful. So, Autonomy is looking for an avatar, Maracy said. She's likely found one, a woman named Telson. Wax's sister? Damn. Granted, there's rivalry among the ranks, Moonlight said. There always is with Autonomy. So Telson will have to prove she's the strongest, the best. And, since creativity and individualism are Autonomy's stated intents, she'll reward grit, success, vision. Moonlight nodded to the half-finished buildings they were passing. This city is an example of that, all designed by one gifted architect Telson promoted 5 years ago. His work is meant to impress Autonomy, but the individual homeowners? They don't get to design anything. They get a manufactured, individual house. Seems like a raw deal, Maracy said. Depends on what you want, Moonlight said. Living under her can be safe if you keep your head down, don't stray into the dangerous regions where she demands that you test yourself. Autonomy is brutal, but also generous. If you impress her, you rise through her ranks. Even if you go against what you're told and you are successful, you are rewarded. And if you fail? It doesn't go well for you, Moonlight said. Her eyes grew distant. She sickens me, but I do understand her, I think. It's taken a while. Maracy sat back in her seat, thoughtful. Answers, finally. But at the same time, how much could she trust this woman? Was any of this true? Why explain this to me now? Maracy asked. Because you've impressed my organization, Moonlight said. We who defend Skadriel have to move very carefully. There are forces in this world, Harmony included, that might crush us if we take the wrong step. That gave Maracy pause. If they didn't work for Harmony, who did they work for? Moonlight led the truck caravan off the highway at last, passing through the outskirts of the city on the northern edge. It's so fabricated, Moonlight said. Look at that sign. You see it? The billboard?
Marcy said, glancing at the large posted drawing of a stylized version of Bilming, with light rising behind it. Pride in Progress, it said, Outer City's self-reliance movement. Those are all over the city, Moonlight said. Knights. The same exact piece of art 100 times over. Art that can be reproduced. Is it really art at all? Of course it is, Marcy said. Why would it stop being art just because it's replicated? It's crass. Said like an elitist, Marcy said. If you truly were interested in the beauty of the art, instead of some tangential sense of control, you'd want everyone to be able to experience it. The more the better. Well argued, Moonlight said. I'll admit that my distaste for autonomy might taint my opinion. They led the convoy onto Biggle Way, then drove slowly in a single-file line. Eventually, someone fell into step alongside Marcy's truck, wearing a red jacket, as the notebook said. She unlatched the window again.
Ahead, across the Grand Motorway, he said. Third building on the right.
She nodded and put the window back up. At the end of the street, they reached the Grand Motorway, a vast 6-lane highway. Marcy had never seen a street so wide. Are there really so many cars these days that such a thing is necessary? They're planning, Moonlight said, for a much larger city in the future. Well, they might not need that many lanes yet, but there was still plenty of traffic on the Grand Motorway. They had to wait for traffic to slow and give them a chance to cross. Ahead, she could see a line of large warehouses. The third one's cargo door was open. That was it, their drop-off. Are you going to interfere? Marcy asked. With our operation? No, Moonlight said. You have my word. Can I talk to you afterward? Marcy asked. Yes, Moonlight said. But Marcy, I can only say so much to an outsider. For now, I'm just here to watch. At a lull in the traffic, Moonlight pulled across, though the other 9 trucks had to wait their turn. And what if bullets start flying? Marcy asked. You're going to sit here and watch? I'm not a constable, as you pointed out, Moonlight said. So yes, consider me an external admirer of your work. Interested in the quirks of those who follow the law and their value. She smiled in a knowing way, then pulled into the cavernous warehouse. As soon as all 10 trucks arrived, the sting could begin.